It's known as the world's friendliest border, 5,000 miles of unfenced, unwalled international coexistence and a symbol of neighborly goodwill between two great nations, the United States of America and Canada. But just how friendly is it really? In the new book, War Plan Red, the secret Cold War between the United States and Canada is revealed by Kevin Lippert. From the pork and beans war between Maine and Newfoundland lumberjacks to the pig war of the San Juan Islands, culminating with excerpts from actual declassified invasion plans that the Canadian and U.S. militaries drew up in the 1920s and 30s, Lippert looks at the ever-evolving history of these North American continental relations. Kevin Lippert is the founder of the Princeton Architectural Press, which he has run for the past 34 years. We welcome him to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So the name of the book, again, War Plan Red, the United States' secret plan to invade Canada and Canada's secret plan to invade the United States. How did you become aware of this?
This came from a question at a press conference. Somebody asked Obama about American plans to invade Canada, and he laughed it off and said, there are no plans that I'm aware of for the United States to invade Canada. But the website I read this on had a footnote at the bottom and said, in fact, however, the United States did have a detailed plan to invade Canada in the 1930s called War Plan Red. So I followed that down the road a little bit and learned about War Plan Red, as well as the very typically Canadian, politely named scheme, Defense Scheme Number 1, which was their plan to invade the United States, was actually written 10 years before our plan to invade Canada.
Our plan was around 1930.
31, yeah.
1931. So their plan dates back into the 20s.
1921, yeah.
Okay. What would have caused such a thing?
There was residual tension between the United States and England after World War I. The biggest item on the table was that the United States had loaned England a huge amount of money to finance their participation in World War I, and Britain was upset that the United States wanted to be paid back. So there was, and the United States was emerging as a world power at that point, trade, military, and there was a sense that yet another war between the United States and Britain was inevitable, and Canada would be the battleground for such a war.
And while you say World War I, all of this tension really goes back to the Revolutionary
Revolution.
World War. Sure.
After the American Revolution, at the Paris Peace Treaty of 1783, the negotiators drew an imaginary line stretching from the East Coast to the West Coast, mostly following the 49th parallel. But this was in an age of where that land was not well known, explored. There was no satellite technology or GPS to help define the border. So a lot of it was very fuzzy, and there were a lot of skirmishes around the border. And in fact, there are still a few today, as a matter of fact. Some exclaves, American territory that you can only get to from Canada. There's a disputed island off the coast of Maine that neither country seems to want to press much farther. But so there was an ill-defined border, and there were lots of small trade skirmishes. You mentioned the lumberjack war, the pork and beans war, and then the pig war on the West Coast. So for almost the entire duration of the United States, we've had minor skirmishes and little snits with Canada.
So when it comes to an invasion, are these backup plans sort of in case, or are these active? We really have to do this kind of thing.
I think that's what the Pentagon does, I assume, is they sit around and they plot out what-if scenarios, war
right.
games. So in both of these plans, War Plan Red and Defense Scheme Number 1, were what-if plans. Canada thought that if the United States invaded them, it would be a disaster. So the best defense was a good offense, and so they imagined a scheme in which they would invade the United States in a series of lightning raids and then retreat quickly, blowing up bridges and roads behind them to buy time for the British to sail to their rescue. And the United States, on the other hand, saw a massive invasion, which basically would culminate in a war with England, which we would win, and we would kick England out of Canada once and for all, and we would have the United States of North America.
when it comes to these the drafting of these plans, do we know, as you say, one came in 1921, the other one came, the American plan came in 1931. How aware were they of one another?
Not at all. Bits of...
They were indeed secret.
They were indeed secret. The United States knew nothing about Canada's plan and vice versa. Although some of the United States plan was accidentally leaked from the government printing office and printed as a page one story in the New York Times. But I guess Canadian intelligence didn't read the New York Times in those days.
When you look at the actual, I mean, you've used the word skirmish a couple of times, but when you look at the actual issues, they don't seem to be monumental.
No.
Okay. So it's basically a turf war.
It's a turf war.
Okay.
I mean, lumberjacks was over logging rights, and the pig war was over a potato. So it was...
is it something that you see that the individual, the specific areas affected were much more part of this than the government of Canada or the government of the United States?
Yes, these were local skirmishes. And in both cases, there were quick buildups. There was in the pig war in San Juan Island, there were 2,000 British soldiers were sent against 500 American soldiers. And then because the British had the overwhelming advantage, they were given the command to invade. But the British Rear Admiral stepped down, and he said to engage two great countries in a war over a pig is ridiculous. So he stepped down, and ditto with the Lumberjack War, the Pork and Beans War. Lord Ashburton gave a lot of the disputed territory to the Americans with the comment that the territory we're talking about isn't worth much, so why go to war?
So, and then things like Irish-American nationalists taking over Canada, holding it hostage, demanding that the British withdraw from Ireland in exchange for Canada's safe return. So they take Canada hostage.
This was the idea. There was a group of rabidly anti-British Irish-Americans who had this idea right around the time of the Civil War that they could invade Canada and hold it hostage and swap it for Ireland with Great Britain. That didn't work out so well. They mounted about five unsuccessful raids into Canada, and they were repealed or defeated. And finally, the United States had a non-aggression treaty with Canada at that point. And finally, President Grant had to jail they were known as the Fenian Brotherhood, but also referred to themselves as the Irish Republic Army. So that's the first occurrence of the IRA.
What does it say about us, just in general, that when we, and I assume they do the same thing to us, but when we
they meaning the Canadians.
The Canadians, right, which is part of our audience, so I shouldn't say they, but it was all of us together. But it seems that when we think of that, of an invasion of Canada or in Canada invading us, there's probably the first thing was a chuckle. Right? I mean, and you have a very breezy, humorous, sort of tongue-in-cheek tone in the book.
Well, the whole thing seems, from our modern perspective, seems kind of silly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the premise of the book. Given how linked our two countries are now, the fact that we were either side or both sides were contemplating an armed invasion seems just kind of on the surface just seems crazy.
So what does it say about Canada? What does it say about the United States that we have the relationship that we do now, which just sort of seems to be bemusement?
Well, the book came apart in part because our Canadian distributor asked if there was a project in the works that would appeal to Canadians. I asked her, well, what would that be? And she said, well, you know, Canadians are very sensitive to what Americans think about them. So I thought the fact that we didn't have an invasion plan suggested we didn't think enough about them. We liked Iraq enough to invade Iraq, but we didn't seem to like Canada enough to have a plan to invade them. So my sense is that most Americans don't think a lot about Canada, although we should. One of the conclusions of the book is just how tightly our two economies and cultures are linked right. at this point.
Well, we think about their healthcare system.
We do.
We think about moving there if Trump becomes president. Yeah. Like those are the kind of things when we think
and
about
Scott
Canada.
Walker is going to build a wall,
right?
Which he's going to need to keep people in from fleeing.
So that's when Canada comes up.
Yes, my other sense is that some Americans think of Canada like in a kind of sense of a younger sibling who's maybe a little smarter and yeah. a little better liked by people.
Right.
I mean, they seem to be, they're happier than we are, they're healthier, their government is...
Well, they don't get in as much trouble.
They don't get in as much trouble.
And they sort of live off our largesse.
Well, I don't know. That seems provocative. It's not the other way around.
They can dip their toe in the water, come back. You can be a part of the World Series and then go back to Toronto.
They have the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, that's true. Right.
They use our beaches. They own 24% of foreign real estate investors are Canadians, so they're a big presence there. And our 250,000 Canadians live in Hollywood, so they control to a large extent, our entertainment industry.
Which has become a very, let's say, not inexpensive, but less expensive place to mount many, many productions.
Canada.
Yes.
Toronto often stands in for New York.
Yes. What is it about the idea of our relationship? Because you mentioned Scott Walker, and we talk a lot about immigration, and obviously we think more south than we do north. Although even during this latest prison breakout, where we immediately went to the Canadian border, and you realize how closely actually the two countries work together, mm-hmm. to protect. So certainly over time we have forged a very close bond.
Yeah, I use the phrase we've slipped quietly into peace.
Yeah,
when nobody was paying attention. We got so connected that now having war with Canada would be like lighting a fire in your own living room.
Right. You are, as I mentioned in the introduction, the founder of the Princeton Architectural Press. They are the publishing company who published this particular volume. How did that press get started?
I was a student at architecture school and at a point when we
at
were...
Princeton.
At Princeton. When yeah. we were encouraged to go look at classic books in architecture, most of which were not available out of print. So I had this harebrained idea to reprint some of those books that would be useful for me and my classmates and presumably other students of architecture. And so I reprinted a couple of books when I should have been paying more attention to my studies. And by the time I graduated, I had this small business on my hands. I graduated in the mid-1980s right into Ronald Reagan's recession, which most of us have forgotten about, but there was 10% unemployment in 1983. So it was very hard to get a job as an architect. Not that it's so easy now. So I thought I would stick on with my publishing business, and here we are, 35 years later.
And still going. And does it have an affiliation with Princeton or
no.
the Princeton University Press?
No, neither. We were for many years in Princeton, and then. But at this point, no, there's no official. It's because we were in the town, we use the name, or I use the name.
Mm-hmm.
But then we moved to New York, and now we're opening an office actually in Hudson, New York. So we're heading toward Canada, mounting our own invasion.
So what is it, what are the challenges? And I realize I leave you very little time to answer a very complex question, which is, for you, what have the challenges been in being an independent press and staying an independent press?
yeah, that's more than a two-minute answer.
Right.
The challenge is selling books in a world that seems to devalue books. Increasingly. I mean, I don't want to mention any large online retailers by name, but there's a sense that you could start to give the books away. If you want to sell e-readers, the content becomes less and less valuable. So there still seems to be a growing, growing audience for people who appreciate well-made books, high quality books. I love my designer did a great job on this book, Mia Johnson. And so we found our niche, and we continue to grow it.
Yeah. And the product is very fun.
It is. Well, this one's fun. Not all of our books are fun, but this one is.
Yeah. Kevin Lippert's new book is War Plan Red. It's published by Princeton Architectural Press. Kevin, thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fascinating project. Thank you. We post all of our segments online at wamc.org/roundtable. So if you missed anything or want to hear something again, you can go there. It's wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.